Thank you for coming. Let me introduce our panel, and I'll call them on, and they know where to sit. Alban, why don't you come up first? Dr. Mira Peza had his bachelor's degree from Trent University in psychology. He then went on to do international chiropractic sports science program, master's degree from McMaster. Then, if that was not enough, he became the team chiropractor for wrestlers, weightlifters, track and field athletes, swimmers, and swim teams. He has accompanied athletes and is their team chiropractor and accompanied them in Olympics, Winter Games in Beijing, Vancouver, London, and Sochi. We confirmed he has not been to China in the last 2 weeks. Prior to him coming here. So thank you, Alban. Dr. Barbara Weiss, has had her bachelor's degree from Wilfrid Laurier University in business. She did her naturopathic medicine from Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine. And she must have been great there because she became the vice chair and the chair of the board of Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine. She's currently at the board of the Port Hope Community Health Center. She has been featured in magazines called the Best Health Magazine, the Globe and Mail newspaper, and Canadian Health Network. So that is Dr. Barbara Weiss, and she is a doctor of naturopathic medicine. And I forgot, Alban is a chiropractic medicine. You probably figured that out. So the next one is Dr. Ahuja. Vinita, why don't you come up? Dr. Ahuja had her bachelor's degree in science from University of Toronto. She went to medical school in the University of West Indies. She did her residency and fellowship from Wayne State University in Detroit in internal medicine, followed by cardiology. And if that was not enough, she then trained as an Ayurvedic therapist. And that is the qualification that brings her here today to us. She has practiced in invasive cardiology in the United States and currently is also practicing in non-invasive cardiology in Scarborough. So that is Dr. Vinita Ahuja. And the last but not the least is Sarah Wasberg. So Sarah, why don't you join us? Sarah earned her degree in kinesiology from Queen's University. Then went on to Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine to become a naturopathic doctor. She has researched in cardiometabolic lifestyle. She is a certified sports nutritionist. And get this, and you can figure out that she is very, very young. And at this young age, she has won the Humanitarian Award for 2018 from Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine for her work and contribution towards humanity. So you can say we clearly have a pretty august audience, right? So the way we have formulated the questions is essentially to bring about how do each one of these folks look at the same issue either similarly or with a difference. So to bring that out, we said we'll focus. The first question is essentially, what do you do when somebody comes to you and say, I'm actually really okay, I don't have any problems, but I'm looking for wellness and advice on wellness and prevention. So because we don't have, you know, a person wearing the traditional Western medicine hat, so I'll fill in for that and say, in a traditional family doctor's office, it would be screening, which would be age and stage based, followed by advice on vaccination, lifestyle, about diet, exercise, and habits, and then if depending on what findings are there, yes or no on medication. That is what we are used to when we go to that. But we can start in whichever order you want, left to right, and then go ahead, Sarah.
Okay. So.
And can you, if you don't hear in the back, just raise your hand and I'll pass them along.
Perfect. So Dr. Weiss and I are both naturopathic doctors, so I'm interested to hear a little bit about where our perspectives are the exact same and where they're different. So we may have talked a little bit about this before coming in today. So in terms of prevention, somebody comes in for prevention and general wellness, they're otherwise pretty healthy. There's kind of the foundations of health that we talk about in naturopathic medicine. So this is a lot of the things that Dr. Bhargava has already spoken to. So diet, exercise, sleep, and ensuring that the foundations for all sorts of different medical conditions are prevented with all of those things. But when a patient comes to see me and they're asking about prevention and wellness in general, usually they have something in mind. So usually it's like they're looking to prevent something somewhat specific. So when that's the case, really it's about looking at what are all of their risk factors for that condition and helping them establish, you know, how much risk are you actually at for this condition. So for example, if someone comes in, they're looking to prevent X condition, we'll go through their personal medical history, their family medical history, and establish what their risk is for it so that they can actually decide if they're willing to do the things that I'm going to recommend. Because if it's not a big enough issue to them, they're probably not going to be willing to make some of these pretty big lifestyle changes that we sometimes talk about when it comes to diet or exercise and changing those things. So establishing their risk and how much benefit some of our treatments might have so that they can say, okay, yeah, I really do want to work on that thing and change that. It's really relevant to me, I'm motivated to do it, and there's a big enough effect that you can have that I want to do it. So yeah, that's kind of how I would take that. It really depends on what their risk factors are. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's great. No, I agree. I mean, people go through phases, I think. Thanks to everybody for coming out and spending the evening with us, first of all. It's nice to meet all of you as well. So, I agree. People go through phases of wellness. Sometimes they feel great, and other times something happens, and suddenly the person who's never seen their doctor in 5 years says, wait a minute, I better go get a checkup. So let me just ask all of you, just to get a sense, can anybody in the audience just give me an idea? What is your idea of wellness? What do you think wellness means to you? Anybody? Lots of energy, so maybe how you felt when you were 16. Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Okay. Anybody else?
Feeling generally good.
Okay, that's exactly. So mentally, spiritually, health, physically, emotionally. Okay, so a holistic kind of wellness. Oh, that would be amazing. That's a tough one, especially for women, right?
Yes.
So, you know, I'll tell you the Ayurvedic perspective. So Ayurveda is one of the oldest medicines on the planet, I would say. Ayur essentially means life, and Veda means knowledge. So it comes from a knowledge of life, and it looks at life in a very holistic way. So as opposed to Western medicine, which kind of says, and now we're so specialized that we need a specialist for the posterior part of the back part of the eye, and that's all that doctor will do, is that section of your body. So we're so super specialized, and you know, Western medicine kind of targets it, and it's important to do that as well, to look at the minute details. But to give you an analogy, it's like if you've ever, does anybody paint? So have you ever painted a huge picture, and then you see a problem in it, so you go in really close and you try to fix the tiny problems, but then you notice something else gets messed up, so you go to another section, you fix it, and then something else is mixed up. But if you take 5 steps back and you look at the whole picture, you see the problem and you see the symmetry is off. So Ayurveda is essentially that. It's different from Western medicine in that way, because although you need to go into the painting and fix those things, you also need to see the big picture. So we really look at wellness as an entire thing, and exactly what you said, it's emotional, physical, spiritual, it's mental, it's your entire well-being. And so we can use methods in our daily practices, we can use, you know, herbs and different plant therapies that are designed for specific illnesses. We can use a bunch of things. So this is a loaded topic, Mikesh. I don't know how I could answer it in 10 minutes, but we could go on.
Both of you have said that it is assessing what the need is, mm-hmm. and then looking at it globally. So it is similar to what happened in the family doctor's office, is saying, okay, what is their risk? And then coming up with a strategy, mm-hmm. but here your tool set of treatment might be different.
Different. So, yes.
Okay, good. Barbara, you want to add anything to this?
I think just to add to that, unfortunately, the majority of people that come to see us are not coming for prevention and wellness. They're coming because they're already sick. We did a survey years ago when I was at the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine to find out what the population base actually was, and the smallest percentage were people that were coming in for prevention and wellness. But we do have those people come in, and I would say, just to what Dr. Vosburg said, that naturopathic medicine, similar to Ayurvedic medicine, looks at the entire picture, looks at the totality of symptoms and what is creating that pattern of disharmony in a particular person. And we try to optimize health by taking a look at both the physical well-being, the emotional well-being, the stress component that's impacting a person's daily life. And we lay the foundation. I always use the analogy that we're building a house, and we've got to lay down a strong foundation for the purpose of prevention and wellness. And those foundational elements would be things like sleep maintenance, making sure that we're having our best ability to get through the night uninterrupted, or at least quality sleep, making sure that we're putting the right foods into our body, because food is medicine and it does make a difference for how someone actually feels, making sure that we're hydrated, and also making sure that we're getting movement every day, because movement, sitting is now the new smoking, and a lot of people don't move as much as they should be, but they may not be able to move because they're in pain. So we look at all of those factors, and one critical element is looking at stress management, because stress will impact everybody's ability to get better.
Go for it, Al.
Well, I'm not sure I can add much to the three ladies that just described it so well, but I think I as a chiropractor, I might have a different perspective, but if someone comes in for advice on wellness and prevention, I think the first thing I'd like to have is a conversation, you know, about their idea of what wellness and prevention is, and because, as you know, I think there's many components to it. And being that this panel is in integrative medicine, I think wellness and prevention actually subscribes to that integrative mode of dealing with prevention and wellness, where not one profession can do it alone. I think it needs many professions to play a role. If nutrition, I think naturopathics or Western medicine, I think, is better equipped to deal with nutrition, a component of wellness. In my profession, I think we would probably deal more with mobility and the physical and exercise-based issues that the person may have. As Canadians, I think we spend most of our lives acquiring wealth and success professionally, and then we spend all of that wealth at the older age to acquire back our health that we gave away, you know, because it escaped us as we are trying to acquire the wealth. So it is good, I think, to be focusing on prevention rather than dealing after the fact that you have illnesses, but inevitably you'll have to deal with both acute as well as trying to prevent the illnesses before they happen. As I said, our profession would focus more on the exercise, and we will probably be catering the advice around the function, physical function and mobility and exercise-based physiology. If it's something simple that we can prescribe to them and they're able to do it on their own safely, that would be where it would stay. If it needs more rehabilitation, then again, being part of an integrative medicine that is the focus today in our society, then we'll pass it on to a physical therapist or a physiotherapist. We'll pass it on to someone that does personal training and so on. So it's a complex, I think, wellness and prevention is a complex issue to deal with, and it needs many components from different professions.
Okay, great, thank you. So what we'll do is
I'm very interested in all this.
Okay, so we'll ask you to speak up, and let's see if I can turn it up too. Can you tap the mic?
Check, test. Can you hear it better now?
Okay, so we gotta just hold it up. So thank you for speaking up on that.
Well, that's good. Right.
Do you want us to repeat it? No, just
I'll start over.
So the second question is, so the person, as we have talked about, wellness and prevention, and we'll save questions towards the end because we leave ample time for that. So the next question, Alvin, if you could start with, so now you have a person who presents with a problem. The traditional medicine folks, what we would do is we say, okay, let's do a history, let's do a physical exam, let's do some imaging, or let's do some tests, or blood tests, and then we come up with a treatment plan, and then we say, okay, now go buy this medication or do this, and then come back and see us. So that is the way. In your field, how do you evaluate and diagnose and follow up on people who come in with a problem?
So chiropractic profession deals with musculoskeletal conditions primarily. We are trained to recognize, if somebody cannot hear, just raise your hands and I'll speak a little louder, but I don't see any hands, so I'm gonna keep the same volume. so we treat musculoskeletal conditions as in our chiropractic profession, but we're also trained to recognize conditions that present as a musculoskeletal condition but are not. They may be visceral, or it may be, for example, if somebody comes in with back pain but they're having a heart attack, or if somebody comes in with shoulder or arm pain and they're having, you know, heart issues, we're recognized to recognize the condition and refer them to appropriate profession, which would be cardiologist. Dr. Bravo take over at that point. So as far as for musculoskeletal conditions, we do very similar testing that Western medicine does. So if you go into your family physician, they will do some orthopedic tests. They will check some of your reflexes, will check some of the sensation and so on. We have a few more special tests that we use in our profession, but the base, I think, is the same as they would use on any profession that relates to musculoskeletal conditions, such as physiotherapy or orthopedic surgeons or physiatrists.
Okay. Barbara.
In our profession, our intake typically starts with a very detailed health history. And when I say detailed, it's just that we spend anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half as our initial intake. Because we go through a very detailed health history as well as the current body systems that we sort of review, your digestion. We're really interested in your bowel movements. We're very interested in your sleep habits and those sorts of things. And that tells us a lot of information. So we use the detailed intake, but we also get objective information by doing our own physical examination. We will perform either a complaint-oriented physical or a full physical if we feel it's necessary. And then we rely on lab results. So we are able to order blood tests through Life Labs or Gamma DynaCare. It's not covered under OHIP, but we do have access to it if we need it, if we feel that it's necessary. And we also do some functional testing where we think it's applicable if we're stuck with we're just not able to properly assess and figure out what is actually going on with this person. There are functional tests that we will often order, such as a comprehensive digestive stool analysis that can tell us if there's inflammation down along the digestive tract, or we can look at things like if there's any sort of gut bugs that shouldn't really be there. So there's many different tools that we have available to us, and if your naturopathic doctors are trained in traditional Chinese medicine, the use of tongue and pulse diagnosis for diagnostic purposes, not everyone uses it in practice, but we're all trained in it. And clinically, I do use TCM diagnosis as well in my private practice.
That's great. So I think most different types of medicine, whether it's naturopathic, chiropractor, Western, or Ayurveda, we all rely on, first of all, a comprehensive history, as you mentioned, and then a proper physical examination. So the history gives you an idea of what's going on with the patient. The physical examination then confirms what you might suspect in terms of signs that you might find. And then your lab testing or other modalities will further confirm what you suspect. So it's like playing detective. So by the time you get to the lab modalities, you have a good sense of what might be going on. And then you come up with your diagnosis and your management plan. So just as in TCM, they have tongue diagnoses, in Ayurveda, we use sort of again, a holistic approach. You take a proper history. But your history taking actually starts when you observe the patient walking in the door. Your physical examination starts then. You're looking at the whole individual. But to really explain, you know, the types of testing that we do in Ayurveda, I'd have to give them a bit of background.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Sure.
A second? Okay, so Ayurveda is based on the principle that we have five elements in the universe. We have earth, water, fire, air, and space. You can't prove to me that anything in your body is made up of something different than those five elements. That's all we have. We have those five elements, and they occur in any different combinations in our different bodies. And the different combinations, the different forms, is what gives us our different beautiful features. Everybody's so unique. So when we're born, that's our natural constitution. We're born with a certain proportion of each element. And as we go through life, whether it's related to poor food intake or different dietary patterns or emotional stresses or environmental stresses or, you know, big natural disasters, that combination of elements shifts. So where you start with more water, you might end up with more earth element and certain types of cancers that grow because it's more earth quality. So we deviate from our natural constitution from birth throughout life. And the concept of Ayurveda is that we want to bring our health back to what we were at the time of birth. We want to bring that back. And there's many ways to do it. So to diagnose the issues, we do so many different assessments, you know, the full physical with the tongue assessment, getting a nice history of what you looked like as a child, how your personality changed, what type of traits did you have later on in life. All of that gets incorporated into your diagnosis. And then there's certain, of course, lab tests and other things we can do, and you get into treatments. Many times there aren't many lab tests, and because from the history and physical, an Ayurvedic physician, at least the really well-trained ones in India, know exactly what the problem might be, and they start their treatments right away. And you start to see the shift, and the elemental balance comes back to what it was. So one of the key methods of diagnosing these different imbalances is pulse reading. And whereas in cardiology we look at five facets of a pulse, in Ayurveda there's many other facets of a pulse. We look at the different elements in the pulse, we look at the different ratios, the different doshas, which is a combination of the elements, and from that you can figure out what the person, even by the pulse, the deep pulse reading gives you their constitution at birth, and then the superficial pulse reading gives you their constitution now, and you can try to go back and match it. It's actually quite fascinating. People spend their life just trying to learn how to properly read a pulse. So it really requires a lot of training.
Thank you for that explanation.
Sure.
It's somewhat, the tongue and pulse is somewhat similar to traditional Chinese medicine. So, Dr. Weiss did a great job at explaining a lot of the assessments that we use as naturopathic doctors. So the labs, the physical exams, the lab work, the diagnostic reports, imaging reports, and that sort of thing. But I think a really big emphasis is on, you know, the over an hour that we have to spend with a patient to not only talk about their symptoms, but just to get to know them as a person, their personality, what makes them tick, what motivates them. Because at the end of the day, the health behavior changes that we're going to recommend are only useful if it's relevant to the person and if they're willing and able to make those changes. And you can really get a good feel for all of those things by just talking to someone for a little while. And then we marry that together with the labs and the physical exams and everything else, and we have, you know, a treatment plan. The other thing along with that time that we have to spend with patients is we can really get into a more detailed chronology of their symptoms, or a timeline, detailed timelines of, okay, when did things start? When did things start to change? What symptoms were first? What was before that symptom? To really get an idea of what's going on and what might have caused this condition to happen. And along with that, sometimes we'll send people home with diet diaries to record everything they eat. And these kinds of diaries and timelines and work on the patient's part can give us a lot of answers as to what's going on. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. So the third thing was, which was a tough one to put without making it sound that you're trying to judge a specialty. So take that question in its spirit. Is that the question is, what are the conditions that you can cure or significantly improve that they do not require ongoing visits back and forth or treatments back and forth. And I'll be honest, when I said, if I had to answer that question, there are not many that I can say, oh yeah, I can cure hypertension, coronary disease, heart failure. I can't cure any of them. They are more like you make them more tolerable. So what would be the things that in what you see in your line of medicine?
Yeah, it is a big question, and it's a little bit triggering, that question, actually, because the College of Naturopaths of Ontario is pretty strict with what we're allowed to talk about and what we're allowed to claim, which is amazing because it protects all of you from false claims and that sort of thing. So we're actually not really permitted to use the word cure. So with that said, the things that we can have a big impact on with people, generally, from my perspective, are conditions that are more chronic in nature, autoimmune conditions, things like chronic pain, and we can really have a big impact in helping improve some of those symptoms. And they're not going to go away often because they are chronic issues, but we can have a really big impact on improving somebody's quality of life and improving some of those symptoms. That's one big one. There's a number of other ones that I could speak to. One of my favorites is really we allow the allopathic doctors to cure certain treatments per se. So it might be an infection and you need antibiotics. And you should absolutely see your family doctor or an allopathic physician to get those antibiotics because you shouldn't wait for any infection to get worse. So in that case, there's complementary treatments that we can provide so that you can be cured of your infection, for example. So just like there's specific antibiotics for different types of infections, there's specific naturopathic treatments that are actually studied for specific outcomes as well. So if we use our antibiotic example, antibiotic-associated diarrhea, it's awful, but it happens, and it happens fairly frequently. There's other side effects associated with antibiotics that we can help prevent with, for example, specific strains of probiotics that are studied to prevent antibiotic-associated diarrhea. So I think, you know, the allopathic doctors in some cases are a lot better at curing certain things, but we can really help a lot with some of the side effects so that you're able to take that full course of antibiotics and you're able to be cured of what it is that you're looking at help with. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was a great answer because I do feel anything that is sort of later on in the stages of disease requires the skill and research and science background of allopathy. And that's why we've developed it over hundreds of years. But that being said, and I dare say so, in Ayurveda, I have seen people walk out of middle stage cancers. Now, this is not going to an Ayurvedic doctor, getting some herbs, and going home and expecting the cure. This is when you actually immerse yourself in what is actually Ayurveda, which is a whole entire lifestyle involving daily practices, yoga, meditation, herbs, and recurrent visits to reassess the disease. So when you immerse in a program like that, I have seen people walk out of very serious illnesses, that heart failure included. But again, when it gets to late stages, if we don't have the necessary knowledge or resources, we need allopathy. If you have a car accident, you break your arm, Ayurveda probably won't fix that.
Neither will we.
Right? And to the point about antibiotics, what did they do before 1914 when we had or was it 1917? 1914.
14.
Yeah. So people survived UTIs, they survived other things. There are other herbs and methods, old, you know, wives' tales methods that really did work, our grandmother's therapies, right? So they maybe didn't survive as long, or maybe they wouldn't have survived so many infections, and we're thankful for the antibiotics for that. But I think, you know, if we really were to immerse ourselves in Ayurveda, which is not possible in North America right now, then things are possible to start shifting disease around. But why is it not available here? Well, first of all, we don't have enough people that have had the arduous long training that is required. Secondly, we're under snow cover for the majority of the year. We need to grow the proper herbs, and the herbs need to be grown close to where you live. There certainly are things that can be done in Canada, which we're working on, within, at least in the Ayurvedic community, to bring some of that here, so we can at least start implementing some change in that way.
Thanks. Just to add to what Sarah said, we don't talk about cure with respect to naturopathic medicine, and it's I think that the college has stipulated that because there are some people that will make claims that are unfair, I would think, and attract people for the wrong reasons. But I also think that our philosophy with respect to illness is different in the sense that we don't look to the disease as being an entity. We look to it as a pattern of disharmony. And so when we're looking to treat a person, we're trying to bring them back to a state of harmony rather than rid the body of a particular disease. So everything is connected. We know oftentimes when people come in to see us and they have eczema, for example, that it's related to digestive issues. That we see them when we clean up the gut and we actually help with their digestion function, they end up clearing their skin issues. So we look for those connections, and I would say if in the spirit of what your question is asking, what do we do well at treating, I would say gastrointestinal issues. We see a lot of people that have IBS, we see a lot of people that have inflammatory bowel disease, we see a lot of people that have food sensitivities or undiagnosed food sensitivities that seem to do quite well when we identify. They see improvements in other areas, whether it be just even absorption of nutrients, so their iron status comes up, their calcium levels come up because they're now starting to absorb their nutrients. We do well with skin-related issues for the same reason that we look to find what the root of the issue is. Is it connected to allergies? Is it connected to something in the digestive tract that isn't working properly? And we also do well with pain management. I mean, I think the general consensus right now is that the prescription of opioids has been a problem for the last couple of years. There's been a couple of studies that have come out recently, even in the States, where they're actually going to start providing funding for acupuncture for the treatment of pain in response to trying to lower the amounts of opioids that are being used. And that's something that that we can also offer in terms of a therapy that can be beneficial for pain management.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barb. In the chiropractic profession, we definitely don't cure anything. And I think if you hear those claims, that's not accurate. So I'd stay away if I hear that claim. But we do treat musculoskeletal conditions. As I said earlier, we have a lot of parallels with the physiotherapist and orthopedic surgeon in terms of the diagnostic tools that we use. Typically, you would use or would treat anything that arises from the muscles, your skeletal system or your nervous system, anything that back pain, neck pain, knee pain, foot pain, anything that comes in as a condition that is related to those systems. Then we primarily do that by using a few tools. We're unique into that we use manipulation for related to the joints. So if the problem comes or arises from a joint in your system, say back pain, neck pain, or typical that you hear a pinched nerve, we unpinch that nerve. So we use manipulation as our sort of main tool that we use. But then we, over the years, chiropractic profession has evolved into using exercise physiology. So we use now a lot more exercises to maintain a proper function on the joints and muscles of the body. And I think that's relate to the earlier question of prevention. That's very desirable in our profession to use that. I personally do not see as a success if someone comes in repeated, you know, visits for the same thing. That's not really treating that condition successfully, in my view. The definition would be that you treat it, you restore function, and we give you the tools to do it on your own. Could be through walking, it could be through some other exercise, some stretching routine, but that's what we normally do. Some of the conditions that I think you may not typically think of a chiropractor is, for example, jaw pain. because it is related to, as I said earlier, musculoskeletal condition. The jaw is just another joint with moved by muscles and connected by connective tissue and tendons and ligaments. So anywhere from your neck to your foot. I apologize. I think I'm going to speak. I have to say this is the first time I've ever been asked to speak up. It's usually the other way around, to quiet down. But so yes, that's what we do essentially. Musculoskeletal conditions, primarily through manipulation, mobilization, exercise physiology, and then we employ all the other tools often that you see typical in physiotherapy or other orthopedic professions, such as laser and ultrasound and those on. But those are more modalities that are new to our profession. So yes, that's okay.
So I think they have answered most of the question that we had formulated. The one that got answered indirectly was, what are the conditions that you would say to somebody, please go see somebody else? So infections, trauma, you know, medical emergencies that we think of, heart attacks, strokes, clearly are more for the acute Western medicine, the emergency room, and those kind of things. Here is a question that I would like to ask, and then we'll open it for questions, is what, you know, how do you see your practices 5 years from now or in the future? Because right now we had a show of hands. People said, yeah, I've seen people who we would say complementary medicine or alternative medicine, because the way complementary and alternative medicine is defined in the truest world is that if I go in, instead of my hypertension, I say, I'm going to go see Sarah and I'm going to stop my medication and I'm going to take what she tells me to do, that is alternative medicine. If I go to her and say, you know, I'm going to take my medication, but I want to lower the dose, I really don't like taking them, can you change it? That would be complementary medicine. But if my doctor and an alternative or a complementary medicine doctor would work together, that would be integrative medicine. And so how do you see integrative medicine happening? Because right now, we are in the space of complementary and alternative medicine. Hearing all of you due to variety of conditions. So, and speak loudly. Right?
I'm certainly going to try. Integrative medicine actually is the way of the future for healthcare, and not just in North America, but around the world. About 15 years ago, I graduated from chiropractic college, and I remember sitting on my last year in my classroom, and we're going through a course that had to do with healthcare systems and how it works. And I think I concluded that I think the future of healthcare is definitely integrative medicine, because not one profession can do it alone. Let's take, you know, Dr. Bhargava deals with internal medicine, or you would have, for example, someone that comes in with a heart condition, cardiovascular disease, or a heart attack. He would do his part, and then at some point, I think there'd be another profession, like a physical therapist, that would be doing the rehabilitation for his cardiac rest. After that, I think, you know, he would also want to lower his cholesterol and wants to reduce his risk for stroke and so on. And then maybe he'll send them to a nutritionist, or send them to a naturopath, or
Ayurveda
doctor. And then from that point on, I think maybe they would go in and they are not able to do the physical exercises because they have a back condition, so they may come and see a chiropractor. So you can see, I think, that even a simple condition that we would associate with cardiology profession, it may need other components for them to go and fulfill, sort of feel completely rehabilitated so they can move on, you know, with better health. So when I was sitting on that classroom about 16 years ago now, I just realized that there's not many health centers, if you will, or health professions that are all in one place, unless that was a hospital and unless that was some kind of government-run profession. I think maybe 2 or 3 years after I graduated, we have now Northumberland Health Centers, community health centers that are community-based. And that is actually a fantastic way of preventing disease, because they have now diabetic nurses and they have a variety of different...
4101, housekeeping, call 4101.
So that was part of my presentation. I hope you like the joke. I kind of worked that. Then you go in there and they take cooking classes, which is a fantastic way of learning how to eat healthy. They have nutritionists, they have physiologists. So you can see now that has, on the last 20 years, I think, or 15 years, that has started to move into what I'd consider to be proper integrative medicine. I personally, when I was sitting on that classroom, I had a dream that I said, you know, this should be the future of healthcare. And I went and bought the name Port Hope Health Center about 16 years ago. So I acquired that name in mind that we should have maybe a private health center. I'm very proud to say that we have been able to accomplish that. And at the Port Hope Health Center now, we have family physicians, we have chiropractors, we have massage therapists, we have physiotherapists, we have naturopath. Barb and I work in the same place. And then my vision of putting all of these professions together under the same roof was simply for the benefit of you, the patient, the public. And now I think we have realized that, because if someone comes in and sees their family doctor that has back pain or has some, you know, nutrition deficiency or diet questions or stress-related questions or some kind of physical deficiency that the physiotherapist can address, the doctor simply walks into the other room and says, I'm going to refer you to this patient. And then 15 years ago, I didn't envision that the medical doctors will come in actually to watch the treatment of their patients in my room after they refer them, because they are curious to see what we do and how they get better. But that's a very clear example, I think, where the future of healthcare, as far as I'm concerned, should be. So that's my definition of integrative medicine, and that's my contribution to it so far.
And just to add to that, I work in that setting as well, and what I like about it, what I would like to see more of, is just collaboration with the primary care providers. We have great relationships with the primary care providers that we work with, and so that the patients are telling their primary care provider that they're seeing us, and in often the cases, they're referring them to us to be seen, because they realize that there's a need for patient care that they either don't feel that they have the ability to deliver for them, or feel that we would be better suited to it if it comes to nutrition, or maybe it is another way of dealing with high cholesterol that doesn't require, like maybe the patient has indicated they don't want to try a pharmacy first. And so the doctor will refer them to us and say, okay, let's give it 6 months and see what you can do. And it's really nice to work that way, because you share information, of course, always with the authorization of the patient, but you share information and the patient benefits because we're talking. And when we have that dialogue going on, we can talk about things that we feel that might need to be tested that we're seeing, because we see them more frequently. And they're willing to also participate in that, which is really, really beneficial for the patient. The other thing that I think would be beneficial, like I, in Toronto, I also practice a day a week, and I have a relationship with a gastroenterologist who refers people to me for the purpose of nutrition with his inflammatory bowel patients, and also with patients that have IBS, because he feels that that isn't an area where he can spend time with them, but also knows and recognizes that there's a huge element to nutrition when it comes to inflammatory bowel disease. And that's a really nice working relationship, because the referral comes in, we treat them, we fill him in on what's going on, so by the time they go back to see him, he's already updated on what's actually happening with the patient. But I think that for us to move to a real model of integrative care, it really has to start at the education level. So in medical schools, they already have interprofessional collaboration courses, and they're great, but they don't include necessarily naturopathic medicine or some of the other complementary care options that are out there. But they'll have other aspects of healthcare providers that are they're learning about and talking about, but I really feel that it has to be integrated at all the medical schools, at our naturopathic schools, there's 7 naturopathic schools across North America, so that we have more open dialogue. Because I think a huge part of it is a misunderstanding about what it is that we do. And if we knew a little bit more about what each other does, there'd be more respect back and forth. So I think that's important.
I think that's a great point. So if you look at the last 10 years of how natural medicine has sort of developed, at least in Ontario, there's been this little war going on between having been on both sides. There's the Western medicine and then there's natural medicine. And when I go to my Ayurvedic colleagues, I dare not talk too much about Western medicine because I'll get crucified. And then if I go to my cardiology colleagues, I dare not talk about Ayurveda. So there's this thing going on back and forth. And I think, you know, we as care providers, if we're on one side or the other, tend to get caught up in it again because there isn't open communication. But patients also feed this because they'll go to the naturopath and say, okay, well, my doctor put me on all these crazy medications. Now I'm having these terrible side effects. My liver's failing. There may not be a full understanding of it, but they're scared of the drugs. Legitimately so, there are side effects. But there's also rationale for using those drugs mm-hmm. in certain situations. And then they'll come to the Western doctor and they'll say, my naturopath put me on this herb and I don't know what it is, but I've got this huge rash and I'm going to stop everything. And so we're making it worse, right? So we really need to back off. And I like to call it collaborative medicine. Because when you're dealing with health, we need to throw the book at it and the kitchen sink and anything else you have. Any tool that you have in your tool belt, let's use it. So let's all get together, everybody as a community, and say, you know, what's the problem here? Let's use this modality. Let's use chiropractic. Let's use naturopathic. Let's go to an Ayurvedic. Let's figure it out, but throw everything at it until we can get us back to health. Collectively.
I really like that. I really like the point about it at the end of the, like, so there's all these really cool models that exist. There's in Toronto, I have some colleagues that sit down with the family doctor side by side and they do the intake together, and based on the patient's preferences and what they're both seeing, they'll decide on a treatment plan as a team in the same room together. And I think that those types of models are really incredible and can be really useful for patients. But the reality of it is that's not accessible to majority of us, financially or otherwise. So I think what it really comes down to is, like you said, is like changing our beliefs one at a time. So, you know, like having some trust in your family doctor and your alternative healthcare providers that they really do have your best interests in mind. And that doesn't mean that you shouldn't ask questions and be curious and you know, really be informed about what's going on. But there's a certain level of trust that we all need to have with each other as patients with our doctors and as professionals with one another. So I think what Dr. Bhargav is doing right now in bringing us all here together to have this discussion with all of you is where we need to start in starting to change and understand what each other does. And I've learned lots about Ayurvedic medicine. Mm-hmm. And so when we understand different types of medicine and the benefits and have some trust that I'm not going to try to treat your broken arm if you come to see me and I'm going to refer you and this sort of thing, we can build these relationships and then the collaborative care just follows. So we start to communicate more because we have this relationship.
Right. Thank you. So I think one of the key messages Vinita pointed out was if we start saying to our allopathic doctor, oh, my naturopath did this or gave me these labs and you got to order them, you are just, it just messes up the whole gamut of things. So thank you for doing this. And just 2 announcements. The next month's PACE talk has been switched with the April PACE talk. So the March PACE talk is about habits, the science behind habits. Mm. So we often say to people, you know, you should quit smoking or you should exercise. But we know what we got to do, but how do we make it a habit and what is the science behind habits? So I'll be speaking on that. And in April, which was the March talk, which was about advertising, in what was the topic? Dr. Hanna was speaking on It was about, I think, advertising and how to recognize, you know, fake versus real information. Can I borrow
medical
this?
Medical marketing.
So the talk was titled Medical Marketing, Tips for Consumers to Help Separate Fact from Fiction. So that is Dr. Handa, who will be speaking in April instead of March. And our last one in May will be Care for Loved Ones at Home, A Caregiver's Perspective by Bill Provecki. He's right here in the audience. So that will be our last talk for this 2019-2020. So again, thank you for coming. I know we have gone a little bit late than usual, but thank you for your support. Okay.